It's good.
Okay. And thank you for this little handy-dandy purse to put it in. Joan was the innovator of that. I didn't have a pocket. Okay, any other questions you have for me before we dive in? You can ask other questions along the way. It doesn't have to be just now. Yes? Is my preparation different for a women's retreat than for a men's retreat? Not a whole lot. Not a whole lot. I recently did an online class on the Enneagram with just men, and it was a lot of fun to do that. It was a bunch of group of men from churches up in Spokane, and that was a lot of fun. The conversation goes differently, but preparation didn't go that differently. I mean, maybe some of the stories that I share and things like that, but not that different. They were asking me back at that table whether they could eat the M&Ms, and I said I wouldn't be that cruel to put them out and not let you eat them. They are an edible object lesson, and you don't have to wait until we're talking until to eat them. They're there for eating. I'm not that unkind. So I want to jump in then, and like I said, you can ask questions at any time. How many of you, I want to start off, how many of you have ever heard a sermon about being created in the image of God? About being created in the image of God? Raise them high. Like a specific sermon about being created in the image of God, like about the Imago Dei. Okay. More than I expected, more than I usually get in a group. This is why I'm passionate about this, because being created in the image of God is Genesis 1. It's right there in the beginning, and yet, I mean, there was probably a third or maybe a quarter of the people that raised their hands that they've heard a sermon about being created in the image of God. That being created in the image of God, the Imago Dei. The Imago Dei is just Latin for image of God. It is central to understanding the message that Christ was trying to teach us, and yet it's not the message that's taught very often. How many of you have heard a message about we're sinners in need of grace? Raise your hand high if you have. Okay, that's just about everybody. What chapter is that? We're sinners. If being created in the image of God is Genesis 1, what's we're sinners? Genesis 3. So we often start the gospel with Genesis 3 and not Genesis 1. When you present the gospel to somebody from a Genesis 3 perspective, what are you saying to them about who they are? They're sinners. That's their primary identity. Basically, we're telling people that they are a plain M&M. One of the reformers called it a pile of dung covered in a thin layer of snow. And it's as if when they accept Christ, they get an Imago Dei in them. Right? They get an image of God in them. And if they don't accept Christ, then I have the image of God, but you don't. Right? That, I believe, is why so many people reject Christianity. Because we don't start with the fact you already have the image of God within you. And I can see it. I can see it by the way you fill in the blank. Love your daughter. Love music. Love creation. Those are part of the image of God within you. That if we can't see the image of God in somebody else, that actually says more about us than it does about that person. And I think it's a way better way to present the gospel than to start with you're a sinner, because you're starting with what's already in there. Now, what I find over the years as I've taught about the Imago Dei or the image of God, people have, they kind of cock their head and they're like, well, I guess everybody has an Imago Dei. And I challenge them. It's like, if they don't, than what God created them. If you don't believe that everybody has an Imago Dei, then you are a polytheist. You think that there's multiple gods and some other god created them. And that when they accept Christ, now they're created in the image of the God that we believe in. It's actually a great way to present, to talk about who Christ is. And I'll tell you a story about it, just about how you can really bypass people's resistance and their biases about God if you start with that starting point. So my oldest brother is the oldest of 11, so when he was a young man, he was a hippie, and he also didn't want to have any kids because he raised 10 kids. And when he was a hippie in Arizona, he came up here to some Oregon festival, and he met this woman, and they were hippies together, and she got pregnant. And she said to him later on, "This might be your child, but it might not be. It might be this guy that I'm with." And she gave him an out, and he took it because he was just 20-something. And then 9 years later, she says, "I think this is your kid." And we didn't even know that we had this nephew. And my brother was a hippie, but he was raised in a Christian home. This mom was not. She was Jewish by her heritage and didn't have any Christian background. And she was, if my brother was a hippie, she was like a 10x hippie. Seriously. So this nephew came into our lives when he was 9 years old, and he knew nothing about, he had no Christian background. But being in our family, by the time he was 23, he accepted Christ, and he didn't let his mom know right away. And I'm not even sure all the things that led him to that, but all of us kids are Christian of one stripe or another. And so, you know, he just kind of went along that way. Well, the mom, Joya, was visiting me, and we were very friendly. I treated her like a sister, and she was up visiting because he lives up in Oregon. And she said to me that she was really, she goes, "Katie, I don't want to offend you because I know you're a Christian, but I'm really upset at Danya's girlfriend because he led her to be a Christian, made him be a Christian, and I don't want him to be a homophobic, hypocritical, blah, 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 Christian." And I said, "Joya, I don't want him to be either, but I know for a fact that Danya's girlfriend didn't lead him to the Lord." See, the girlfriend was a PK, but she was raised a PK, so she had fallen away from, she wasn't a believer. My nephew took her back to church. And so I said to her, I said, "I know it wasn't Angie that led him to the Lord." I said, "Matter of fact, I think it was you." And she was kind of taken up short. She's like, "What do you mean by that?" And I said, "You represent so much of God's nature in you. You love your son. You would give your life for him. You love community. You foster beauty. You," and I just named like 10 things. And she started crying. Tears started rolling down her face, and all the resistance was gone. And she said, "I didn't know that was God in me. I just thought I was being a good person." So where did you think that came from? That came from God created you, and that's God in you. And so then I said, "God that you are afraid of is not the God that I know." And I told her the story of the prodigal son, just, you know, in a kind of simple way. And again, she was just kind of tears flowing down her eyes, and she said, "I didn't know God was like that." And the next time she came to visit, she said, "Tell me that story about the son again with his father." And I don't know where she is in her spiritual journey right now, but I know that she is way, way less allergic to Christians than she used to be. Matter of fact, she says things, her and her husband say, "If I was ever going to be a Christian, I'd want to be one like Katie," you know, or stuff like that. I mean, like, they're not so, you know, that's all bad stuff. But I work hard to see the Imago Dei in them and call it out in them no matter what. And it's easy to do once you start understanding that. Because we don't create anything. We're not creators. We're the created. All we do is reflect things. And everybody has goodness in them. You know, Philippians 4:8, what is it? I'm maybe mixing up. Whatever's good, whatever's right, whatever's pure, think on these things. Think on these things. What's good and right and pure in that person? What's good and right and pure in you? We tend to get stuck on our own darkness, our own what's wrong with us, and not in what is the goodness in us. So, if you happen to have read the article that Wendy made available, you know that my favorite metaphor for the Imago Dei is a prism or a diamond, because it's that pearl of great price or that treasure that's in the clay jar that's within all of us. But as I started to understand this, and I'm going to put this sign up because... I find a lot of times when I'm teaching about this and people are like, what's that word you were saying all that time? What's that word? It's Imago Dei. And the reason why I use the Latin for it instead of just image of God is because some people are allergic to the idea of God. But if I say I see the Imago Dei in you, they don't get offended by that. Right? It's just like, oh, I have an Imago Dei in me. It's a diamond. You know? And we can talk about that. But when I first started to understand this concept of the Imago Dei, I was like, why do we not show that? Why, if this is who we really are, myself included, because I felt so much darkness, my own darkness in me, I didn't even know how to name it as shame, but it was my own shame, and it led me down a path, which is where I am today, is passionate about helping people to understand the Imago Dei and how to overcome the shame that hides this. Because I would look around, I mean, I'd been in churches for, I mean, outside of my childhood upbringing, I'd been in churches for like 30 years at that point, maybe less than that, I'd have to do the math, but a long time, in a lot of different churches. And I didn't see people living what the fruit of the Spirit that God describes, and Jesus saying, greater things you'll do in my name. I saw people locked down and afraid to show who they are, afraid to live in joy and letting their light shine. And so it really took me on a journey of understanding how to heal shame, how to heal my own shame, how to come to understand who is Katie in this Imago Dei, and how do I help people understand that who they are in their Imago Dei, and how do we let that shine? Because when we live out of that place, the people who are God allergic are less afraid of us. They're less afraid because we see the goodness in them. But because I believe that when we can live out of this, we actually have like X-ray vision where we can see past people's layers and can see that in them. And since I'm talking about layers, some of you might not have read the article, and so you might not know what I'm talking about with layers. Well, the layers are the things that cover our Imago Dei when we're not living out of it. This world is ruled by shame. It says, you know, that Satan is the ruler of this world, and it's a shame generator. It's constantly generating shame. I mean, every ad that you see is a shame generator. I mean, there's a billboard on my way down here that's for a tanning booth, and it says, shows this woman, and it says, a better shade of you. Because the shade that you are isn't good enough, right? It's the message underlying almost every advertising, especially geared towards women, is you're not good enough the way you are, right? I mean, if it's geared towards men, it's about their toys. You're not good enough with this toy. You'll be better if you have this bigger truck or this bigger thing or a bigger house or stuff like that. All of that not good enough that we get pummeled at us and sometimes by our own thoughts, that's like the chocolate of the peanut. If this is the peanut, then the shame is like the chocolate that coats the peanut. And little by little, it gets covered. Now, you don't have to have something super traumatic happen to you for your diamond to get fully covered, But if you happen to have grown up in a traumatic home that where there was a lot of abuse or alcohol or, you know, any kind of abuse, verbal, sexual, physical, emotional, all of that adds to coding our Imago Dei. But you don't even have to, you don't even have to grow up in an abusive home. You know, you might compare yourself or be compared to, you know, the most, the smarter kid or the more beautiful kid or the whatever kid, and you say, I'm not good enough because I'm not like that one. I'm not skinny like that person. I'm not beautiful enough. All the not enoughs are the things that coat our diamond to the point where we are, we think that that's who we are. And I use the term poodo or poo to cover our diamond. There's actually, there's actually a product out there called Poodo, believe it or not. And I bought it so many times, and I decided I was going to figure out how to make it, so now I make my own Poodo. I figured out if you use instant coffee, it makes it a nice color of brown when you're making Play-Doh. So shame, or the poo that coats our diamond, shame is an incredibly powerful force. I believe it is the most powerful force on the planet apart from grace. It's so powerful, it drives people to do the most atrocious things. Everything that humanity is capable of doing that's atrocious is driven by shame, I believe. Because we're driven to make ourselves better, more powerful, more whatever. And so we do things that are not of what we're created to be. But because we are afraid that this is who we are, just a big pile of poo, we coat it, we cover it with something nice and shiny, protect it so nobody can see it, and we hide it away, and then we tell the world that we're something other than what we were created to be. What are some of the I am statements that we try to tell the world so that they'll love us? I am what?
Capable.
Smart. Loved. Loving. And also loving. Someone other one said over here.
Compassionate.
Confident.
She said beautiful.
Beautiful.
Smart.
Smart. Underneath the smart, what is the person afraid of? If this, if their identity is smart, what's their worst fear in their poo?
Rejection.
Rejection.
Won't be smart.
I won't be smart. I'm not smart enough. If my identity is that I'm smart, how might that play out in my life if I have to prove to the world that I'm smart?
Good grades, school,
but take it to...
Can never be smart enough.
So how might that play out in terms of good grades in school and
perfectionist,
overachiever, driven,
no
balance? Okay, let's take beautiful, because that's a trap that a lot of us women fall into. That we think, you know, we're told that that's, we have to be a certain image. If my identity is in being beautiful, what's the shame tell me? I'm ugly, I'm imperfect, I'm dumb. And how does that play out on the outside if I'm driven to prove to the world that I'm beautiful so that I can earn being loved?
Put other people down.
Spend a lot of money. Yes. Buy into those ads that are on the, I need to be a different shade, I need to be a different size, I need to... I've had model-looking women in my office who are so, their worst fear is I'm ugly. I mean, they are like, could be on the cover of any magazine. And you cannot convince them. They see every single imperfection. But I have these huge scars on my, you know, here. I have these stretch marks. I mean, I had this one woman, I had her show me. They're like imperceptible. But she is convinced that she is not beautiful enough. And the thing that I say about women taking their identity in beauty, it's one of the only identities that's guaranteed to go away. Right? You could take your identity in your smarts, and you could live to your dying day being smart, right? Unless you lose your mind. Right? You could live with your toys or your money or your, you know, as long as the ceiling doesn't, you know, the roof fall on you or something like that. But beauty is guaranteed to go away the way our culture defines it. That really sucks. That your identity is in something that's guaranteed to go away. What are some other ones that we get stuck in traps? Not being a good enough mom. I remember years and years and years ago, it's probably like 20 years ago, maybe it was even more than that, because I don't think I understood shame that much yet. But I was at a prayer time for our pastor's wife at the time, and she had three kids, and she was just struggling so much. She was always under condemnation that she wasn't a good enough mom. So a bunch of us got together, and we were at a friend's house, and we were praying for her. And we were trying to listen to what the Lord was saying to her, and I felt God saying that you're good enough. And almost immediately, all these women looked at me. They turned around, and they were like, what? Good enough, mom? Good enough? How could you be good enough? And I immediately felt my own shame and felt like, well, I must have heard wrong or whatever, you know. And then as years went by, I started understanding that good enough is the anecdote to not enough, right? For if you're driven by, you know, not enough, and God sees us like, you're enough, you're good enough. And about five or more years later, this friend of mine, the pastor's wife, she came to me, she said, God told me that I need to accept that I'm a good enough mom. Because just like anything, when it's our identity in it, we're always going to compare to somebody out there, right? They teach their children more Bible verses. They fix their children more vegetables. They do fill in the blank, if we're just talking about moms, right? So whatever we take our identity in out here, the shame is going to tell us something different and opposite of that, and it's always driving us to have to do more of whatever this is. Questions or thoughts about this?
I do have a question. You were asking about what are those I am statements, and yet those I am statements could be true. So the candy coating can also be the diamond in the middle, right?
The statement is, the I am statements can be true and they can be part of the diamond. Let's take an I am statement and look at it, how it would be through here versus how it would be through here. Okay? So let's take, I'm a good mom. Okay? Through the candy coating, we just talked about how that could play out. Right? If I'm a good mom, then I'm comparing it to everybody else. If it's coming from my Imago Dei, how is it going to be different? If it's in Christ, Christ telling me about this.
Well, I'm not comparing myself.
I'm not comparing myself, for one.
Yeah. I'm just as good as somebody else.
I'm just as good, like flawed, just like somebody else, too, right?
I'm content with who I am.
I'm content.
I love my kids.
I love my kids. Them warts and all and me warts and all, right? I realize if my identity is in being a mom out here, then it has a lot to say about how my kids are. So if my identity is being a mom, then my kids need to be perfect in order to reflect me, because if they don't, then they're telling me that I'm not a good mom, and now I'm going to shame them because they're not good enough kids because I'm not a good enough mom. Do you hear the cycle of shame in that? But if it's from here, from the diamond, I'm a good enough mom, and I'm going to make mistakes. And they're going to make mistakes. And that's okay. And when they make mistakes, it doesn't change my identity, because in here, my primary identity isn't about being a mom. That's one of the main differences. Right? A person who's drop-dead gorgeous out here and takes their identity in it is going to be driven to prove that all together. The person here could be drop-dead gorgeous, but their identity isn't in it. Right? Their identity is in Christ in me, and I happen to be in this body, and they're not going to flaunt it in the same way that this one is. Let's take another one just to compare. What would be another one like that? It's a good question.
Well, how about the just the thing in our culture about women, you know, having it all and being able to do everything, you know, to fulfill multiple roles simultaneously?
So the superwoman complex. Okay. So in the false self or the candy coating, the superwoman complex is I have to do everything. I have to hold it all together. I have to be able to, you know, work and raise the kids and do everything, and I have to do it well, and I have to be gorgeous at the same time. Right? How would that be different from here? From the diamond? What? I'm just as good as I'm doing what God's called me to do, so I might be able to let go of some of these things.
Honesty about the effort.
Honesty about the effort.
Comfortable saying no.
Superwoman can't say no, because she has to prove to the world that she's Superwoman. Right? So no boundaries. What else would it look different here in the diamond?
It's okay to check out sometimes.
It's okay to check out sometimes. It's okay to take my cape off. Right?
You're also very accepting of what's going on.
You're more accepting. Yeah.
Of people around you, of your family, of circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Accepting of circumstances and people around you and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
Or even what you might tend to think, but to really focus on
that. Yes, yes. We're at game time. We'll wrap up here in a little bit. We could keep going and going, but we will throughout the weekend. For me, my superwoman complex was I had to help everybody. I was a helper. And my mom gave me an insight into why I was that way before she died. She died about almost 15 years ago now. And when she was in the care center before she died, when I would have these moments with her when I could tell there was some lucidity, I would ask her questions. And this one time I asked her, "Mom, what was I like as a baby?" And she said, without missing a beat, she said, "You younger ones didn't cry at all because you knew you couldn't get what you wanted." And I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. Why I'm so driven to not have any needs myself. Because I learned in the crib, it's not okay to have needs because they're not going to get met. So I was absolutely driven. I had no boundaries. I had no. And if there was a need, it was like I had a homing beacon inside me and I had to go fix it and find it. And as God was healing my shame, I could tell you a story about that. We'll see. Anyways, as God was healing my shame, I was starting to realize that it was okay for me to need. Need was like my four-letter word. If you wanted to really throw me into a tailspin, act like I needed something. I could not have any needs back then. So I was in this process of God healing that in me and accepting that it was okay to have boundaries and to say no and that I didn't have to fix everything for everybody and that kind of thing. And this one day I was on my way through from my, I live on the out edges of town, and I was going through town and I was stopping at church for something, I don't remember, but nobody was there. I have a key and nobody was there, and the secretary wasn't there, and I was going to meet my friend for lunch or something like that. And the phone rang, and stupid me, I answered it. And this woman on the other end of the phone, as soon as she started talking, I knew who it was. It was that person who is a black hole in your church that you can never do enough for them. And this is how she answered the phone. I'm not kidding. She didn't even know that it wasn't the secretary. She said, "I need somebody, I hate to do this to you, but I need somebody to come pick up my husband and take him to work." And immediately, my internal Siri started doing a rerouting and going, okay, I got to go do this for this person, and I can't meet Martha, and I got to do this, and it started, and it was like in 3.5 seconds, I was already rerouting, and then I stopped, and I was like, wait a minute, why am I doing this? And I hadn't said anything yet, because I was just like this really fast, I'm like holding the phone going, I don't know how you're going to take care of that, but I can't do that for you. And in our conversation, it comes to the light that they actually, her husband's car broke down, but they have another car, and she just didn't want to take him. And so she's calling the church, or whoever answers the phone has to come pick up my husband and take him to work. And I almost did it. I almost dropped what I was doing to go do that. And so I was starting to get some sense of health about this, but I get in the car, and I'm feeling guilty because I'm a bad Christian because I didn't do this thing for the woman, even though I found out that they have this car. Like, shouldn't I have done this? I mean, I'm shitting on myself, and I had to talk to a couple friends and say, was that okay for me to do? Like, that's how bound by my shame I was. I didn't even know. I said no, but I still didn't feel good about it. I still was judging myself that I must be a bad Christian. And it, a little by little, the poodle goes off the diamond, and it's okay to say no, and it's okay to not even answer the ding phone, you know, and it's okay to take care of myself. It's okay to buy myself flowers, you know, it's okay to do those things. But it's taken a little bit of poodle at a time. And a daily, you know, Ecclesiastes says his mercies are new every day because there's shame that's new every day. Life will throw shame at you. Somebody will look at you wrong. Your kid will say something to you. Somebody will not appreciate you. You know, every day, life will throw shame at you. And so we need to live in the mercy of today to wash it away. God, what do you say about that? This is what this person is telling me, or this is the story in my head of what this person is telling me. What do you say about that? And learning a little bit at a time to wash away that chocolate and let the diamond shine. Thoughts or questions? Comments? Anything? Chocolate and poo are not the same thing theoretically, but in this metaphor they are. The chocolate and the poo are the same thing. I hate to tell you that. But yes, the candy coating part covers the chocolate, which is the poo. Other questions or thoughts? The coating?
The coating is the sin, and the chocolate is, created an image of God. And then the peanuts, whatever, the eggs, that is saved by the grace of God.
So she's saying that the peanut, that the chocolate is what we're created. I would disagree with that. I would say that the peanut is what we're created, that it's the part that's within us. The chocolate is our shame, and the candy coating is our sin, our false identities, our idols, that we're not created as poo. We're created as beautiful, very good, image of God bearers. That's where I'm coming from. The grace that we're saved by is that grace can overpower our shame. And that all the things that we judge, we're going to be talking about this more in a later session. All the things that we judge about ourselves, when we bring it into the light, we'll find that God accepts us no matter what. But when we judge ourselves, we actually keeps us out of the light. It keeps us, because we're making ourselves a judge when we're judging ourselves in a way that's different than what God judges us. And that keeps us out of the light, because in the light, there's only room for one God. And when you're judging yourself, you're God over yourself. You're eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil instead of the tree of life. And we're going to talk about that some more tomorrow, too. Thoughts? Questions? Let's close in prayer and play some games. God, I thank you so much for each and every one of the beautiful daughters that's here today and the ones that are coming tomorrow. I pray for a time of refreshment and relaxation and fellowship and fun, laughter. I pray that you would enlighten our hearts to know who we are in you and who you are in us. The prayer that you gave before you went to the cross. Father, that they would know that I am in you and you are in me and that we are one. I pray that we would know that in the depths of our being. I pray in your most precious and holy name. Amen. All right. Are we going to move the games into here? Or do you want to keep them over there?